we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hello and welcome to episode number
69.
69.
It's already begun.
It has. I think it started last week, actually, didn't it? And we know what, we've got everybody on as well. Excuse the term on. Never mind. So, Mark, Gabriel, Lauren, and Rick, we're all here. Big woot for that, I think.
Woo-hoo!
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But you know what? We've got a guest as well. So, best behavior, everybody.
It's too late.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Nope.
Massive welcome to Melissa Gurney. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Yay. Yes, please do not behave.
Hello.
Hello.
It's a nice welcome.
Awesome. It could be Pat Gelsinger and Joe Tucci and we would not behave, so.
True. Awesome.
Melissa, you don't have a photo here on your Skype icon. Come on.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible. I just set this up a few minutes ago.
So. Wow. That's how we roll in the podcast.
Perfect.
You know what you need to do? And we'll put the link to this in the show notes, but you need to go to that Marvel link that Mark just sent in the chat window and generate yourself like, what do they call those things? A caricature based on a Marvel superhero. We'll put that link in the podcast notes and we'll do a bit of a competition to see whose picture gets the best caricatures. Anyway, do us a favor, Melissa, and just give a quick intro to yourself, who you are, what you do, where you work, how, you know, listeners can find you on Twitter, all that kind of jazz, yeah?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Melissa Gurney. I work at EMC. You can find me on Twitter at Solution Geek. What I do at EMC, I just took a new role, actually. So I am the Storage and Availability Solutions Functional Lead for the Americas. So I've got a team of specialist SEs that specialize in our storage, VMAX, VNX, VPlex, RecoverPoint, and I lead them and help enable them, I guess, to position our solutions with customers.
Holy cow, do you have to know all those products then?
Wow.
I've been at EMC 9 years, so I kind of know a little bit about all of them, some better than others. But
so in terms of your management style, are you more of a pepper spray person or a cattle prod person?
Oh, boy.
This is my first management role, so I'm still figuring it out. What has worked for me so far is just finding out what people are interested in and connecting people. So I like to think of myself as a community builder, and that's definitely my goal in this role, is to build a better community, both internal to EMC and externally as well.
Do you know what? I feel like I'm a manager of the four other people that are regularly on this podcast. And do you want to know what my management style is?
Yes, please share.
I think we'd all like to know.
Can I just tell you, and listeners can hear this as well, I don't care. We don't even have an agenda for this show. So, you know, back in the day when we started the podcast, we had all the best intentions in the world, and we also had Hans.
Hans.
Hans. Hey, Hans. If you're listening, Hans, I hope you got that.
Yeah, but it has gone downhill. Well, the back-end planning has gone downhill since he left, but you know what?
But none of us have OCD to that extent either.
No, it's true. It's true. But we like to roll like this, I think. So, yeah, anyway, thanks for being on the show, Melissa. Hopefully it's a good one. So let me just have a super quick run through some of the news. There's not a lot in the news this week, to be honest. A bit of a slow news week. But Microsoft, actually, they're big in the news. They've announced, and I think this is like a couple of weeks ago, right? But we haven't talked about it. Hardware specs for its Azure Stack on-prem hybrid cloud VMware killer thing, right? Then they're also, they're after VMware again with an updated Ubified version of the Azure Site Recovery for VMware. Not to mention, in fact, actually, I think we will mention it, the Uber 8.3 gigabyte update to Windows 10 that I...
Oh,
is that about? But let's park it for a second, so I've got a couple of other
56K,
things.
56K, no way.
Yeah. Sticking with tech-focused news, though, Cisco, this is a good one, I like this, they admitted shipping a whole bunch of UCS kit with the wrong default password set for the integrated management controller. Fortunately, though, it was easily guessable. It was Cisco 1234. I just love
no comment.
That. It wasn't you that did it, was it, Lauren?
Yes, I am in charge of all passwords. It's just
yeah. Funding news as well, though. There are a couple of things in funding in the storage world, right? So Diablo gets a C round of 19 million, taking it north of 80 million. And Zerto takes an E round, pushing them nicely up to, I think it's 110 million. So loads to talk about there, plus anything else that we want to talk about. Let's just see how the dice roll, yeah? You know, I'd quite like to start with this Microsoft Windows 10 upgrade, right? So I'm personally... And I find this funny, right? So I think I'm a huge fan of Windows 10. I keep telling everybody that I am, right? But I have this thing that really annoys me all the time. And if anybody else on the podcast is using Windows 10, tell me if you get this right. But it is constantly forgetting the default app I want to open things with. The number of times I get like, do you want to open this with Firefox or Chrome or Edge or whatever? I'm like, you know what? I've said this like 50 times and it keeps forgetting. But then, so actually, does anybody else use Windows 10?
I do.
I like it, actually.
Machine forgetting, though, is a feature. It's not machine learning, it's machine forgetting.
And Microsoft have got it nailed. They will lead that market then.
So wait, when you go and open a file for the first time, it always apps, it's like an unknown yes. file to the OS. I mean, here's the funny thing. It's like, really, shouldn't like it just kind of default to a list of the apps that you would normally be able to open that file, because we've been doing this since Windows 95 and it should be part of the UI experience to do that instead of having to go dig and make the file association. It's like, do you want .wav file to be associated with VLC?
Windows 10 is about choice.
That's one way of putting it.
Well, remember what they had to go through in Europe with the antitrust stuff that that might be
the decoupling, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're onto that, Mark.
Blame the Europeans.
Thanks, Europe.
Yeah. Nigel.
You're welcome. So actually, let's talk about the update though, right? Because I've got a desktop that I do most of my work on, but I've got a laptop that I take with me everywhere, do most of my like on the road type of work on. In fact, to be honest, even in the office, I use the laptop most days. But I like to live life on the edge with the laptop. It's got 128 gig solid state drive in there. And it's constantly got about 4 gig free.
And how many Docker instances do you have running at any time?
I know, yeah, too many by the sounds of it. But the thing is, right, I never have much space on that, and it's such a like a pain in the rear end, right, to go through and free up disk space and all of that, yeah. So as it happens, I need to do a Windows update, and apparently it's quite an important one, but it needs 8.3 gig of space to do. I mean, that's...
It just crushed my machine, man. It blacked it out. You know, I was trying to get home to go do something with my son, and you get the... I couldn't believe it. It's like, don't turn off your machine message. Really? Again? I could have had a Mac. What
yeah.
was
yeah,
that's thinking?
Like, but that's like two DVDs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just as well you don't get charged for that kind of stuff these days.
Well, yeah. Don't do this on your hotspot.
Do you reckon? Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Just because it's Wi-Fi. Yeah.
That's a horrendously, that's a prohibitively large update. And just think about all those organizations that don't have their patching systems all dialed in, and they have to download that for every PC. They don't have like a single repository with WSUS or something.
I mean,
everybody's trying to download this update all at once.
I think they need to make dedupe a feature.
Yeah.
Was it a security update?
It was
or,
just an update.
Or
it's an update for Notepad.
Bug fixing? Or, great. Yeah, that makes sense.
8 gigs of Notepad, yes.
Yeah, some new games.
Notepad Plus.
Chess 3D.
Plus.
I did tweet about it saying, you know what? I haven't got enough space on my laptop, and is this for real an update? And I forget who it was now, but I got a quick response from somebody who seemed in the know on Microsoft stuff. I'll have to look through my Twitter timeline to find out who it was and give them some props. But anyway, what he said was, it's effectively a new version of the operating system that it downloads.
Yes, exactly.
And then does some jiggery-pokery, you know, shenanigans to... rotate the image, whatever. I don't really know what it does, but it's effectively downloading a whole new operating system image.
Anybody else notice that jiggery pokery?
Oh, is that another thing that's Europe or England specific?
I just think it's Nigel specific.
Yeah, it could well be. Probably
jiggery pokery. I think I'd either get that on a t-shirt, probably get called a bad name if I wore it.
Yeah.
If jiggery, then pokery.
Then pokery on episode 69
pokery,
as well.
Then jiggery.
Family show, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, so just can I come back to my original question, kind of to myself, right? All things considered, right, Mark and Gabriel, because you're Windows 10 users, and if anybody else is, are you honestly, do you think it's a great version of Windows?
It's personally my favorite since Windows 2000.
Right.
Yeah, I think that they finally kind of hit the mark with it. It's like, one, I mean, I didn't bother with 8 or 8.1. I'd
been
on
7
for...
Now that they're redoing,
yeah, now that they're kicking it to the curb. But, you know, I mean, prior to
that,
I was on 7 for a long time. And prior to that, I was on... I was usually just running, like, Windows Server OS, so... But
okay, so what do you like about this more than 7? Because I could roll back to 7 and be happy.
Did
you say your favorite was Windows 2000 before that?
Yeah, Windows 2000.
He liked it more than Bob.
Let's go back to that.
I ran Windows 2000 Server for the longest time as, like, my desktop operating
server.
System. Yeah.
Not great. At least...
Well, I developed back then. Though I worked on products for like one of my very first tech support jobs when I first got in IT was doing this bulk mail software for and then a burst reporting system to digitize all of the green bar financial output for the government into a web. Yeah, really awesome fun stuff. But it was a Windows NT351 product, and so all of us had NT server for our desktop so we could do troubleshooting in real time because they didn't want, you know, they weren't going to give us a server to do it, right? So I'd always ran server as my desktop operating system, you know, up until probably Windows 7.
That's just up beyond belief.
It's a better, more stable operating system than the, and it doesn't have half the chaff. Well, I mean, it still had, I mean, never understood what a server needed media player, but. You know, but they didn't have as.
But,
I thought it was a lot more stable as a.
Did that even have Notepad?
Yes.
Oh, it totally did. Yeah.
Notepad is the commonality across. That's probably one of the one apps. Notepad, Calc, and you know, there's a couple handful there. Came part of the Win32 library.
Minesweeper.
Minesweeper.
Yeah.
Minesweeper was there.
I still don't know how
to
play Minesweeper.
No, me neither.
I really do not.
What? It's easy.
You click. Done.
So I just click on the screen. I'm like, yeah, all right. This is dumb.
Yeah.
Dumbest game ever.
So while we've got you on, because you're going to duck off a little bit later, Gabriel, let's rattle through a bit more of the news. So I want to know, right, is Microsoft... either already or becoming the king of the hybrid cloud? Because I'm quite liking the look of where they're going with this on-prem Azure stack thing, building the kind of hybrid model between the on-prem stuff and then Azure public cloud and what have you. And I think they've obviously got VMware in the crosshairs on this one and also on the Azure Site Recovery for VMware as well. But on Microsoft, so I would say Amazon Web Services are out there as the de facto public cloud platform, but they don't really have a great story when it comes to hybrid, do they? We're discounting Google just about every week at the moment. IBM, I don't know. Is Microsoft the king here?
Look at it from this standpoint. Is like what I think they realized early on was that they were not going to be able to do for public cloud what Amazon does, primarily because it's a different type of customer and a different type of ecosystem. And for the most part, they're not running a bunch of Windows machines to begin with in Amazon, right? I mean, they do work up there, you know, and people do run them, but it's just not the standard workload that goes up there. But they had this huge install base with Windows-based operating systems running Windows-based type solutions, SQL and SharePoint, all in Exchange, all these other things. Naturally, it makes sense for them to build a hybrid cloud solution that natively integrates into the operating system, and they, who knows it better than they do, type of thing. So it's like it is part of their core functionality and their core competency to build something like this and be successful at it and capture the revenue for those products that they would lose to an X as a service, a software as a service offering, or some managed service provider, or somebody else is going to host it for them. And it's a longer term hedging strategy. It allows them to remain relevant for a lot of these organizations that might decide to move, you know, all of it hosted by somebody else. Well, hey, host it with Microsoft, you know, big company, you know, they're going to be around. They're just as stable as, you know, as an Amazon is. So why not?
Well put.
So there was something about the etiquette of that, though. When you started posing that question, Nigel, when you first were asking about it, it was kind of like, well, you know, Gabriel, since you're going to be leaving in half an hour, we need to ask you this question. But we've got a guest. We've got Melissa on the show, and she might decide to, like, never even come back.
I know. You know, I totally didn't mean it like that.
No. It's totally cool. I'm cool.
So the segue now, Melissa, what would you like to tell us about this? I'll make up for my rude British friend here.
You guys are fabulous.
There's no making up for that.
I would say
and
that
those
calling
stickers,
them
the stickers, they're just too big.
Oh
yes.
Sorry.
Stickers.
God. Good God. I want a sticker on a dinner plate. All right, sorry, go ahead, Melissa.
No, it's awesome. So I would say it's probably a little early to say that they just win at hybrid cloud. Obviously there are a lot of players in the space. They're definitely doing some exciting things. Specifically that DR scenario to the cloud. I've been a big, big fan of that idea for a while, and to see them actually put something into play is awesome. And it speaks a lot to kind of the old school Microsoft, where it's like, we're the everyman's Microsoft and we want to make computers accessible to everybody. And now it seems like they're building this message around making the cloud accessible in that way to that market. And I think it's a brilliant place to start, because if your DR is in the cloud, you get used to it, you get more comfortable, and then everything else follows, right?
Yeah, so does that mean it's an easy way for people to get off of VMware or whatever other hypervisor you might be running on-prem and start moving workloads into the cloud? So other than just, you know, let's run DR occasionally in the cloud, let's maybe use this as a migration platform or an on-ramp?
It could be a migration platform or an on-ramp. It could be an easy way to move your dev and test off-site and save yourself some space. There's a lot of things that DR in the cloud in general would enable for people. It's very exciting.
So you said as well, you didn't think that they were the necessarily market leader yet because it's too early to call, I think were your words. So who are their biggest competitors there then?
For hybrid?
Well, yeah.
Just for very classic hybrid.
Yeah, absolutely. And open to everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, their obvious competitor to me is VMware, right?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
VMware
yeah.
has that offering, which is, well, they have three different vCloud Air offerings, right? The really expensive one, the medium expensive one, and the less expensive one, which is their vCloud Air disaster recovery. And I really thought that was kind of an awesome tool back the day. I haven't really been keeping up with it, but a couple years ago, I was really following it when it first came out as a partner. And the services that they offer around it, first of all, were pretty cool, especially if you needed help around the disaster recovery. You know, they would help you actually run testing every, I think, twice a year or something not for free, but, you know, as part of the package or whatever. And it was way more services oriented than maybe what Microsoft Azure is offering right now with their new VMware to Azure solution, I guess. But it does open up that possibility for choice, right? Which is always a good thing, I think, in my opinion.
And I think the
competition.
More, yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, the more entrants you have in the market, the better off everybody's be, especially if they're deep-pocketed entrants and they're trying to do the whole out by the other. I mean, we see that with the larger telecommunications companies, so Sprint and Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. I mean, they're always trying to lure customers away and you know, depending on the workload you're placing up there and how portable they end up becoming, and that's where containers end up being really a boon. You know, there's some viability there. Maybe you change some of your stuff from one cloud to another cloud based on price every year, or maybe you get completely locked in and you're screwed. The strategies they're going to pursue is similar to what we see in you know, the cell phone handheld space. It's enticing customers to come over, giving them the services they need. And then once they have them locked in, taking away their unlimited data plan.
And hasn't that been the Microsoft model for years? So didn't they shaft Citrix with that? They shafted Netscape with that, you know, offering stuff for free or for really, 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 really cheap. You know, something that's like almost at the moment a side offering for them. Versus a core offering, in this case, maybe for VMware. Kind of a core offering for VMware.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what I thought was interesting. When I asked the question, who are their competitors? Either everybody was being really polite and just waiting for somebody else to answer, or they don't really have a lot of competitors in that space outside of maybe, obviously, VMware and maybe IBM. And I'm talking here viable long-term competitors on a global scale, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the competitors they do have are opting out of the business. I mean, look at some of these larger, you know, look at the Centralinks of the world who are putting their data centers up for sale.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of these guys are going, you know what? We cannot compete in this particular space, so screw it. We're going to sell our assets off and try to recoup some of those losses and streamline and then dovetail back into managed services where we can generate a lot more revenue without having to compete against, you know, mega McPockets here.
And do we in the long term run a risk then of having a whole kind of area of the market that doesn't have enough players in there to be truly competitive, and do customers end up losing out there? Or do we think there are still enough big players in there to keep it competitive?
It looks more like an oligopoly than a monopoly, right? You know, it looks like the oil companies or the telecommunications groups. You'll have four or five really large ones that can really enact price and adjust the market, and then you'll have, you know, all of these, you know, these little smaller independent providers or boutique providers that are going to cater to specific customers or specific groups who don't want to join with the, you know, the big org, Globo Gym or whatever it is. And, you know, they will opt for something with a little more local touch, or they'll find some way to differentiate themselves. These smaller players that they provide a service that one of those big organizations just doesn't see as viable. And, you know, or has enough profit in it, right? And that's kind of been the way of the market. That's how companies like a Cricket Communications can stay in business, right?
That's fabulous. Is anybody else spending more time on the Marvel Create Your Own Character website instead? Sorry.
It did not work on the phone, so I couldn't.
Oh, did it not? Oh, it's just the first thing that you click. Oh, where's it gone now? Crap. You have to choose like a kind of body style for your hero, and it's either buff, uber buff, or lady. And I'm like, I'm none of them.
No, there's thick. There's thin, thick, and lady.
Oh, right.
Only okay. One lady?
Thin or thick lady?
It's one. Yep, we are.
Yeah, but
let's
I
be click. Thankful that
you
it's not.
You have one bucket.
Let's be thankful it's not the Rob Liefeld lady drawing, because that would be just really disturbing.
But no, ladies could go thick too. I mean, just because a guy looked, you know, it's hulkish, it could still be a hulkish lady.
I love how you don't have to pick pants, though. That's pretty cool.
Pants are always optional.
See, I click the thin guy, and I don't look anywhere near as buff as that.
Yeah, but I had no problem making a like of image of me.
Oh, that's true. Like well, from a head perspective,
Mark,
right?
I normally see you, Mark. You look like, you know, 2 tons of pissed off beef whenever I see you.
Oh, boy.
It's a superhero, remember, right? So oh, yeah. They have to be somewhat strong, but
yeah. But not if you're a technology superhero, right? Then it's less about the abs and the muscles and the torso and stuff, and it's more about, like, at least on the male side, it's about the beard, and it's about, like,
coffee stains and dark circles under your eyes.
Can you wear sandals? Yeah. Stuff like that.
Is your hoodie, you know, do you have a bulletproof hoodie?
Yeah, Marvel's probably not the place we go for people who can move mountains with their minds like us. So
that's right. So
we're going to have to find another place.
just keep working those options there, Nigel. You'll find something.
True.
We would all look like extras from Mr. Robot.
It is. Okay, so I'm doing it.
I'm totally doing it too.
It's like kind of complicated. Like there's too much. There's too many tasks. I need it. To just be like, pick
give me a picture, spit out an option of predefined superheroes, you know? Yeah, do all that.
It's like your character creation in a Fallout game, right? You get like the default ones, and then you can go in after the fact and mutate the hell out of it if you want.
Obviously, I didn't have enough to do.
We got to do all the work here. We should just
green hands.
Throw in our picture.
You
and
guys, there is a hashtag.
Hey, Tara's getting their money's worth, aren't they?
the thing is, I've got like five of these things I can rotate.
There is a headset, like, so we can be podcasting.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's kick-ass.
At least for the lady. I don't know if the men have the same options.
I want to see Mad Max put up a site like this.
Oh yeah, that'd be fun. Like, what color spray paint are you going to put on your face?
Oh, yeah, I do love that.
I'm like,
there's also
the best were some of the memes. Like, somebody at a hardware store put, like, you know, we'll lead you to Valhalla next to the silver spray paint and put it up for sale right after the movie came out. Like, there's a marketing genius right there. Yeah.
Valhalla.
Hey, guys, I gotta drop, but thanks, Melissa, for coming on. You guys have fun without me.
Get out of here.
You usually do. All right, later.
Thanks. Yeah.
There are two different aprons, an evening gown and a blazer.
A blazer?
Hey. For the ladies.
An apron? Are you serious?
Two different aprons.
Oh, choice of two aprons. Wow. Oh,
so man. I have a question then that's kind of related to this. I hope this goes down all right. So I think I just mentioned a minute or two ago saying, you know, to be a tech hero on the male side of things, it's about the beard, it's about the sandals, it's about that kind of stuff. So on the female side of things, if you're a woman in tech, like, what's the kind of uber standard that you would aim? You know, like, you can walk into these conferences and you can look at some people and say, man, I can tell you just by looking, that guy is like a ninja on the command line, right? Yeah, is there like, is there an equivalent for women in tech?
He's got, like, food stains.
Yeah.
Where are you going with this, Nigel?
Oh, I think this is great.
I think not having a beard.
Not having a beard, yeah, that's going to help, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know that there is a kind of that guy works for IBM kind of equivalent for women in tech, to be honest. Like, I can go somewhere like Vegas. I was in Vegas sometime last year, and IBM happened to have a conference, and I didn't even notice the badges, but I saw the white button down shirts that were short sleeved with the tie and the Dockers or whatever they were wearing. I was like, yeah, those guys all work for IBM. And sure mm-hmm. enough, but I don't think there is that for female superheroes in tech. I mean, there are some where you can go to a conference and say, yeah, she obviously works in tech, but I don't think it's an appearance thing so much as how much time we're spending doing stuff on our phones or on our laptops.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. What do you think, Lauren?
I see more women dressed up, I think, than men, maybe in the same kind of roles. You know, like, you see, like, men, like, sales guys dressed up, right? Or with their, like, jeans and, you know, suit jacket, of course. But women, I usually see them dressed up, I would say. I mean, more so, I guess, than our male counterparts.
Like, more formal, do you mean?
Right. More, yeah? With, like, the exception of me, but, like, oh, yeah.
Well, I've got an observation on the women in IT thing. So in my office, I have nearly 100 tech support people, with a number of them female. And then I also have a number of marketing people, with most of them female. And there's a very marked difference, okay, of the female tech support engineers and the female marketing pros. And literally things like green hair, blue hair, that's one indicator that they are – an engineer type. And
green hair and blue hair, yeah?
Yeah.
I can say a little more punk, red. Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
you mean by blue hair, okay. You mean like a septuagenarian?
I'm going to have to Google that. Is that Googleable?
It is. Septuagenarian.
It's like octogenarian, but 10 years younger.
Thank you, Lauren.
So what I'm getting at, ladies, is that if a girl comes into a technical situation rocking the pink hair, she probably knows her stuff. That's what I'm trying to say.
There oh, yeah.
You go. Advice from the Rickatron for your next tech job.
But there are other girls that are sleepers where they dress more like they're in marketing and then show up and save your life, right? That's the boat cells. I'm in. But
I think you probably are. I think you probably are.
I enjoy being a sleeper, so that's part of
that's
my thing.
That's great, actually. Yeah, everybody expects one level, and then you come in and you just, like, destroy them with tech knowledge, right?
Yeah, yeah, why not?
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Tech knowledge E. I like that.
Hey,
word.
That's good, yeah.
So, yeah. Nigel, have you ever thought about getting, like, orange hair or pink hair or anything like that?
No, but you know what? My hair's really big and wild at the moment, and my wife absolutely hate it, but I'm rocking it. I'm like, I love it. In fact, you know what? I didn't.
Okay.
I'm famous in the family for not brushing my hair even on my wedding day, but I don't think I put a brush or a comb through my hair in 20 years. Normally, I keep it short. But no, I'm serious. But now it's just like sticking out everywhere, and
Nigel's out running on
the heat.
He's
looking
like
Matthew McConaughey, probably, man.
He probably is, probably buff like that. What color should Nigel's hair be? I think purple. I think he'd be good in purple.
You think so? Yeah. Well, I'll see if I can get my character that I'm working on still.
Look, dude, if you're going to be a doctor rock star, a docker rock star, I think you need purple or blue.
Yeah, yeah. True story, docker. Well, what are Docker's colors, maybe you can
kind of blue and gray. Yeah.
Could have gray's popular now. So do a little blue and gray.
In fact, actually, so they just opened up registration for DockerCon later in the year in Seattle. So I might get my hair blue for that.
I like it.
My hairstylist has been trying to get me to change to silver, and it's like, why bother? He says silver would look so great on you, Mark. And it's like, you know, it's already like white. What do I want to go silver for?
It's the latest trend.
I'd much rather be white than silver, personally. Like, my dad had really silvery hair, but I'd love to, as I get older, you know, to have nice tan, good look in England, right? And white hair, distinguished look, yeah, anyway.
Silver fox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eat your heart out, Rick.
I just keep a clean shave and I'll be fine.
So shall we try and twist it back onto news and stuff then? What did we have? So there's a couple of things in the funding space. So Diablo Technologies, right? So they got a new round of funding, a C round, 19 million. So they're over 80 million now. But they got a new CEO as well. And does this kind of thing tie in a lot, do you think? Or maybe I'm reading stuff into this, I don't know. But new CEO round about the same time as they get a new round of funding. Are those two things kind of linked quite often? Could the investors have maybe said, yes, we will invest, but only if such and such comes in as new CEO? Does that kind of thing happen?
I'd have to imagine, yes. I mean, the problem of needing money doesn't go away. I don't have firsthand experience in it, but I'd got to imagine that a board or something says, well, in order to get more money, something's got to change, and the need for more money exists. So I think in a long answer, it has to be yes.
Yeah, I think it's strange to see that as a news item or something, because I think they would try to like sweep that under the rug. But yeah, that definitely happens, you know. And the person that is a CEO might actually not be able to carry it forward or go through the next growth stage or whatever. And you know, a decision can be made, and maybe that person doesn't want to do it, but you know, they're there, they're in the spot. A lot of the times, though, the person that's the CEO, they have the Gollum thing. They've got the ring. They want to do that. But, you know, they're not the only one. There's board members. There's previous investors. There's all kinds of things that go on.
It's not that dissimilar from, you know, activist investors, right? Threatening to pull their money or, you know, give more money, whatever, Elliot, you know, to make changes within the company, right?
Yeah, you just cussed on the podcast. You said the E word. I'm going to have to bleep that out. Let me give a bit of background on this Diablo one, though. So the original CEO, he was the co-founder. He's moved over to the chief product officer, I think. So he's still at the organization. But the guy who's the new CEO, Mark Stibitz, I think that's how you pronounce it. So he was already on the board as an independent. So maybe it was like some kind of board coup or something like that, or, you know, some cahoots, if that works over in the States, I don't know, with the investors to say exactly what you've said there. You know, we'll put money in, bring a new guy in who's ready to kick it on to the next level. Yeah, maybe.
That seems like it'd be like a real kick in the pants to be moved to like chief product officer from, I mean, no, am I wrong?
That'd be great, because all of a sudden you'd have a lot less responsibility. Uh-huh. Your life would be a lot easier. It's just, why not do it?
Yeah.
And I guess it depends on what their history and background is as well, because as companies grow, I guess the role of the CEO gets more demanding and kind of evolves and changes. And if you were like one of the founders, and I don't know in this particular case, right, but maybe you're like, you're more into the technology and the innovation and stuff like that, and the CEO type role hampers you from being able to do that kind of thing, and then sidestepping opens that up. Whoa, hello, somebody back?
Yeah, I'm back. Okay. My call failed. No, you know, so I got an interesting perspective on this one, because I have friends that are CEOs, but that were also the technical CEOs who founded, you know, the organization. But I also have people that I know that are CEOs who were just the idea person and the driver, or the person who had the cash the idea and the ability to execute. And, you know, what I've seen consistently is that if it's the first time around, a lot of those guys that are the technical CEO, that the product is their baby, the company gets to a certain phase where these guys are in over their head or they're out of their element, and then they move into that CTO role, right? And that's fairly common for a lot of organizations, for the guy who kind of brings a company who doesn't have that ability to bring it to IPO or get it sold. They traditionally the board will go out and headhunt or seek somebody who that's their role, right, is to take it to that next level. You see this really commonly as well with a lot of startups when, you know, the very first guy to head their sales organization gets them to, you know, $10 million in business, but can't get it any further. So somebody else comes in to get them to 100. I mean, it's fairly common, I think, you know, to see this kind of shakeup or adjustment in organizations of all sizes.
Hey, just mentioning Elliot a second ago, Melissa, I don't know if you can comment on this, but if you can, I'd be really keen to know what it was like inside of EMC with the whole Elliot thing going on. Did it kind of come up a lot in internal conversations, and were people concerned about that kind of activity going on behind the scenes in the board?
I can't comment on anything that happened in the board because I wasn't privy to any of that. When the stuff went down with Elliot, I was actually in the delivery organization, so building solutions for the customers. There were definitely things that we saw as a result of Elliot's involvement in the field, different programs and initiatives that were kicked off, but nothing I would say that was really talked about at length for any period of time.
Do you have a feel for whether or not customers were affected at all by it, or whether it was on their radar at all, or if it was just like, yeah, well, we don't care. We know that EMC will still be there tomorrow.
I would say for the most part, it was, yeah, we don't care. We know the EMC will still be there tomorrow. Nobody really ever asked me about it from the customer side of things. Most of the time when somebody asked me about it, it was somebody else in the industry going, hey, what's going on with this stuff? And of course, I didn't know anything at the time, so I couldn't really comment other than, oh, well, we have a couple of internal initiatives that they suggested for things that we could do better. But that's really about it. So I don't think it was a concern for customers in general.
Yeah, when I was at Emulex and Elliot was doing their thing too, if anything else, it becomes a distraction to the people in the field because it generates uncertainty. But I don't think it really shapes or affects deals per se, unless they're very large, high-level deals where, you know, it's C-level to C-level where the discussion is being discussed or taken place. You know, we're talking those deals that are like, you know, $10, $20 million and larger, or it's a major OEM integration thing that's going on. But it just, it's always a cloud that hangs over you that there's this group out there pointing the finger, putting their finger into your organization, your company, and, you know, basically just kind of crapping all over the place and making it difficult for people to fully concentrate on their jobs. That was always the impression that I got.
Yeah. And there was definitely some of that. There was definitely some of that while these outsiders are here and they don't know who we are or what we're about. But in hindsight, that was that started up at least 6 years ago. I don't remember the exact time frame, but it's been a long time that they've been involved. And for the most part, it was all worry for nothing. There were some changes that were made. Some of them were rolled back. Some of them are still in place. And it's just been business as usual, right? So yeah, a lot of noise and distraction up front, but not a whole lot in general as far as overall impact to the field's daily life, in my opinion.
Now, they've currently got their teeth in at Citrix, right? So I have two questions off the back of this, right? One, just kind of a straw poll, right? And you can go into detail if you want to, but I'd just be keen on people's opinions on this. Do you reckon Citrix will still be around at the end of the year? And then question two, and I'm going to ask them both at the same time, right? Is 2016 going to be the year of the activist? So a year where activists really come to the forefront of technology companies and pinch the squeeze on them and that kind of thing?
Well, I'll say yes and no without any explanation.
Oh, so you think Citrix will be gone and it won't be the year of the activist?
No. The question is, will Citrix be around? I say
okay.
Yes.
They'll be around.
No, I do not think the activists will take over.
Oh, you don't? Okay. Anything further from anyone else?
Yeah, the investors are definitely not taking over because they don't hold enough shares. All they can do is kind of muddy the waters and maybe impact a little bit of change, depending on the position that they've taken. Sometimes it's making noise. Oftentimes, though, the play that they're making is longer. It's 6 months to 1 year because they have to do that if they've taken a large position so that they can do a long-term. They get taxed at a different rate versus a short-term gain versus the long-term gain. So nothing happens within the first 6 months that would affect their position. Most of the time, this isn't to make the company that they're engaged with better or anything of that nature. It's so that they can realize a return on an investment that they're making. Mm-hmm. They see a weakness and the ability to swing share price a couple points and then get out at a certain point. I don't think it's because they care about the technology or the company or the people involved. You know, this is kind of a form of, you know, investment warfare that they kind of do. And then even then, sometimes there are proxies being leveraged as well, you know, because you have institutional investors and then you have people like Singer and then you have some of these other ones that are like, you know, I'm the man behind the man, and they may, you know, float a position so that they can get something going for some other investment they have going.
Yeah. And work backwards in the money and influence.
Yeah. Follow the money tends to be the rule for these types of things. But it's awfully hard to do, if not impossible. And I really don't think that, you know, the technical reporting is very poor when it comes to really understanding a lot of this stuff. They may have hooks and links into the technology people, but they don't have the ability to really dig deeper into the financial statement aspects of it, to really kind of find out what the ulterior motive or goal is. And every now and then, like, you'll find a company that, or a reporting group that does do that, but they're sitting behind a paywall because that information is worth a lot of money itself.
How do you think Citrix lost the lottery to get their attention? What do you think is really going on there?
They are, well, one, they put that one unit up for sale. So one of their customers in India bought a big chunk of one of their cloud products. I think Citrix is kind of the last holdout of those independent organizations that's not Microsoft, it's not VMware. In terms, but there's still a significant amount or a significant enough of market share for their products, and they still have a significant amount of intellectual property that is valuable.
They're selling off GoToMeeting too, right?
Yeah, yep. But that's and I can see why it sucks.
Yeah. They're just trying to refocus on their core products, though, I think.
Right, yeah. Sure. No, I mean, they should be focusing on, you know, desktop virtualization, app virtualization. They should be getting, you know, into, you know, the benefit of how they can leverage a container workflow and automation tools into their products and platforms and kind of focus on what they've always done really well. And that was to virtualize and provision workload and app instances to endpoints. You know, CloudStack is still, you know, believe it or not, CloudStack actually still has a fairly decent following and a large number of people who use it. It's just, you know, it's not advertised, right? No cloud, you know, service provider is going to go, yep, we're a CloudStack guy, unless you're having a discussion with them internally about their technology. And so they can't really go out and pimp those things. And not to mention, a lot of that stuff was kind of pseudo open source.
I mean, they've been rumored as an acquisition target for years. You know, going many, many years back, right?
Yeah,
Microsoft is going to be the obvious acquirer.
Yeah, Microsoft's going to be the
Centrix. But these knuckle-dragging, you know, Elliott guys or whatever are saying, well, we're finally getting around to thinking Microsoft should buy Citrix.
Yeah, but they're not going to have the whole story on some of the other, you know, agreements that I'm sure have happened between Microsoft and Citrix over the years. It was kind of those, you know, there's got to be some backroom thing saying, hey, you know, it's not necessarily collusion, but it's not like we're going to screw one guy over another, you know, because they have this symbiotic relationship and they always kind of have. But what does Microsoft really gain from buying them?
I'm not so sure that I could answer your first question, Nigel, about, you know, will Citrix be around very confidently and say yes. I mean, I'm not saying no either. And if we extend that out to 5 years, my confidence gets a little less even. Because I think, you know, I'm seeing more and more big financial institutions and other types of large companies move to, you know, VMware's Horizon products. NetScaler is a really popular product and integrates with a lot of things, but I don't think NetScaler is big enough to, you know, hold the company down
carry
itself.
Carry a company, yeah.
Right. So I don't know. That's my take. I'm not as confident about it. You know, 1 year, yeah, maybe, but 5 years, that's different.
Good shout. Hey, so here's something kind of similar, right? And I know this is going to sound ridiculous right off the bat, okay? But we all know that IBM, okay, have been having terrible year after terrible year after terrible quarter after terrible year, right? How long does this go before we start to think, you know what, IBM might be in some serious trouble here? And I mentioned that, right? So just tiny bit of background, right? So their shares are down, as always seems to be the case at the moment, but down around about 17% from this time last year. But they've just had three senior execs walk out the door this last couple of weeks. Walk out the door, pushed out the door, whatever. I don't know. Change. And you know what? That kind of change goes on all the time at a big place like IBM. But I mean, they are on a downward spiral. And okay, they're huge and they've been around since forever and what have you. But does anybody think that IBM might be in a pretty serious, sticky situation?
I think that the CEO might be. I mean, you have, what, 5 years of downward trend. That's usually, you know, grounds for a
dismissal.
A dismissal or a readjustment. But also, I also think that IBM as a company doesn't necessarily care about the share value to the extent that they are planning and they forecast and they're looking at more longer term plays, and they're willing to take a few years of bad stock price in order to make those transitions. And you've seen that they've kind of pretty much abandoned the entirety of the hardware industry that, you know, that built them out, except for those really super high margin ones that they have a lock or a stranglehold on, i.e. mainframe and then power, some of the, you know, the P-series stuff. I mean, I think if anything, they're probably going to dump their storage holdings if somebody wants to buy it. If not, they'll just let it continue to, you know, stay there. But they'll reduce the amount of spend that goes into it. But, you know, Microsoft,
I think it's interesting
IBM
that
IBM is making a transition. They're in this transitional phase, and I think that they've been willing to accept losses during the transitional phase as they make that journey into something different, as they reinvent themselves to a certain extent.
I really like the way Watson looks. I really like the look of the future of IBM. I think Watson's a great story to tell, and I think they're doing a great job telling that story and getting people socialized to this new concept of IBM that is not old iron and hardware anymore, but this new technology of connecting people and computers and companies and what it means for the future of all of us. And and I think it's going to be a really exciting thing. So I don't think that IBM as a company is in trouble. As already mentioned, maybe the CEO, but I think as a company, they're doing fine and they're doing what they need to do to be extremely relevant in the future.
Yeah, I think what's in trouble is people's perception of IBM and always trying to hold them to their old vision. And maybe IBM hasn't done a very good job of shifting public perceptions of what their new role is. I mean, I look at Watson and things they're doing in healthcare and medical space and these other things. And, you know, they're going to be a major player in Internet of Things. You know, those types of things are much longer strategic plays. They're not something that, you know, you put a product out and 6 months later, everybody's popping corks because it, you know, it's in the black. These are longer term, you know, 5 and 10 and 20 year initiatives, instead of something that, you know, most stockholders are looking for is quarter to quarter bumps.
Yeah, I look at IBM and I'm a little worried for what it means for the future. in a way that is IBM going to come back and rule the world again? So I would say that the future looks positive. The present's what it is.
They're 104 yeah. years old, and they're going to come back. They're going to grow. I mean, you got to look as a 2014 numbers, annual revenue, $92 billion. This is a big company, right? So, sure, they're adjusting. They're dropping their commodity stuff. The servers are gone. 2012, they even dumped their point-of-sale systems. You remember those, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
they got the services. They've got the power systems, the mainframe, that stuff that Gabe mentioned, right? They've got a
and Watson.
400
huge services arm.
Yeah, 400,000 employees plus. I mean, this is a big company that I think is critical behind the scenes, and I think they're going to reinvent. And you know, what I don't see as an innovation path in terms of revenue and brand success is like a new server, a new storage, a new piece of kit. I don't see that as part of the plan.
I don't think they're going to make it. I think they're going to die because they don't support Docker.
So can I have a quick straw poll on IBM then? So will they ever be great again, Mark? Will they be great again?
Nope.
Lauren?
No.
Melissa?
I think they will.
Gabriel?
I don't think they've ever not been great. Really? I think our perceptions of what the, you know, like we get caught up in flashy and shiny and new. A company that's doing $93 billion in revenue, they're pretty great.
Yeah, great.
Fair enough. Right.
Rick, ever be great
greater
again?
Than me.
Great again, yes, but please don't grade me on this in 2 years.
Okay, fair enough. So does anybody have anything else before I move on to hot or not?
I think we should put a calendar marker in this and say, let's come back and see how IBM's doing in 2 years. If we're still doing this podcast.
If we're still doing it.
Yeah, and maybe the podcast has a chance of being great. And
yeah, maybe. Here's the thing. Which will be great, the podcast or IBM?
Oh, IBM.
The podcast.
Okay, so we've got this new thing that we've been trying for the last few weeks, hot or not. Can be to do with technology. Doesn't have to be, right? Before I dive into it, right, are people cool with me doing that one that I mentioned earlier, or does somebody have a different one they want to do?
I was going to say chocolate chips inside pancakes, hot or not.
No, I don't like pancakes, not hot.
Oh, my God.
Rick, hot or not?
What, chocolate chip pancakes?
Yeah.
Not. I mean, don't put sweet on sweet. What do you do? Top it with syrup? Whipped cream? No, not hot.
Okay, Melissa?
If you're not putting anything else on it, hot.
Okay, Lauren?
I'm not a sweets person, so I'm not hot. I'm an omelet girl.
So far, Mark, hot or not?
With those little cinnamon red hots, super hot.
Hey, super hot. Ooh. So I got another one, right? This is an article that I read from our friends over at LREG. Apparently, the Australians are considering biological warfare on carps. Oh, here we go. Imported from Europe. So blame the Europeans again.
Way to go, Europe.
Apparently, wreaking havoc in local Australian waters and killing off local fish and stuff like that, right? They're... I better get this right, actually, because it could be embarrassing if I say the wrong thing. They're considering a mass herpes release for population control of carp. Apparently, this biologically engineered weapon, if I can call it that, talk about spectacularizing it. Apparently, it kills off between 70 and 100% of this imported nasty European carp, but has no impact, apparently, on the rest of the local carp and water populations over in Australia. So anyway, that's the gist of it, right? Is this kind of thing not... I don't really want to know, is it kosher? I don't know. Hot or not? Mark, is it hot or not?
Well, the rabbi wouldn't bless it, but I think it's hot, just like I like bioengineered salmon.
Okay, cool. Fair enough. Lauren, is it hot or not?
Well, I mean, how does it affect the humans, like eating it or swimming in the waters?
Are you eating carp?
Well, I don't know what they do down there in Australia.
And are they just practicing on the carp?
In that foreign land? It is a prison colony. We never know.
English? Right. But, okay, people swimming in the water. How about that?
It's a penal colony anymore. I mean, don't go.
Yeah. Am I going to, like, resurface in the water with, like, a cold sore, though, you know? Like, something I need to consider. And so I'm leaning towards not hot
not
for that.
Hot. All right. Reason. Melissa, hot or not?
Yeah, herpes aren't hot. Sorry.
All right, Gabriel, hot
or not? Never been hotter.
Yeah. I'm really not down with any kind of fish STDs.
No.
And you know what? Anytime humans have tried to do something by, like, kind of doing something to mess with another species or introduce something, they invariably f*** up. That's why we have, like, green snakes in Guam that have killed all the indigenous animals. I'm saying not hot because...
And X-Men,
yes.
El Ricotron?
If this process has been used successfully in like conditions, I'm hot. By the way, saw a movie much like this just this week called Mimic. It's kind of freaky. Check it out.
Check it out.
Fisherman's Wife. And Fisherman's Wife Part 2?
No, it's about a created bug to kill another bug and kill a disease. And same type of thing, genetically engineered solution to go into the wild. Pretty freaky.
I love the sound.
It wasn't the one where like the with Natasha Henstridge?
Subway bugs.
Splice? I think that's Splice, isn't it?
Splice was a different one where they made the creepy, was weird, it? Like baby with the mouth in it on top of its head or something.
Mimic was about the bug in the subway.
I thought Mimic had Natasha Henstridge in it or something. In.
I don't know. She would, like, late at night.
Well,
she's Mimic, an ex-person.
I mean, there are like 8 billion movies that tell us why it's a bad idea to release herpes into the open.
Yeah, I know, but that's Hollywood, right? We don't believe that, do we?
It's all the truth, Nigel.
Yeah, that's true.
All movies and
where
the internet.
Where I get my education from.
Oh, speaking of movies, you got to watch Ex Machina. That one was awesome.
Oh, yeah, I watched that. Yeah, that's
Machina.
Good.
Ex Machina.
Machina. Yeah, Machina. Machina.
Say
Macarena.
It like would you?
Dos Ex Machina.
Hey, has anybody seen Apocalypto?
Yeah, that movie's awesome.
Yeah, so one of my buddies told me about that, and I watched it the other day. That is brutal.
It's nonstop action. It's like hardcore too.
In fact, actually, so we were talking about Star Wars: The Force Awakens, and I was saying how, you know, I wasn't thinking it was that great, but it was nonstop action from start to finish. And he said, if you want to see something that's nonstop action from start to finish, check out Apocalypto, subtitled. But it was an awesome film to watch.
Yeah, there were very few like breathers in that movie. I mean, it was kind of like the ultimate chase film. I thought it was beautifully shot. I thought the acting was really well, and I don't think it ever got quite, you know, because it was a Mel Gibson film and it came in right after Passion of the Christ and all this the craziness there, that it got the due that it deserved, because it's a pretty well-made film.
Oh, it was a good film. I enjoyed it, yeah.
That's not Mel Gibson, is it?
Yeah.
He wrote and directed it, yeah.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Well, he did a lot of research on that, too. I mean, like, they speak the proper Mayan dialect for the time, and, you know, a lot of accuracy went into that. They went live down there for like a year while they shot it. I'm pretty sure that's why he went with partially crazy.
He is so 420 friendly. It's not funny.
Hey, so as we wind out, does anybody else have any other film recommendations? I've got Mimic from Rickatron there. I've already seen Ex Machina. Splice. Anything else for me to write down?
28 Weeks set in the UK. That was kind of freaky.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah.
Late Show.
Was that the vampire one?
It was a virus.
Zombie one. That's an old one, but that was quite
28
good.
Days Later was the first one, and then they did 28 Weeks afterwards. I thought that the 28 Days version, I thought that one was really well done.
Yeah, that was good. That was
the opening scene of that movie scared the crap out of me.
Yeah, Danny Boyle. Yeah.
Let me do it this way. So, Mark, do you have any recommendations films-wise for me?
Well, I'll go really boring on you. Spotlight.
Spotlight, and I'll check that out then. Lauren?
I've been hearing about that everywhere. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to get back to you. I can't think of anything right now.
All right. Melissa, anything that's particularly cool?
I will have to get back to you as well.
Oh, man. Gabriel?
So I got two. Obviously, Making of a Murder is the slowest thing I've ever seen, but it's still kind of fascinating to give you a peek behind, like, bad justice.
Uh-huh.
But the other one is Bloodline. And that's
Bloodline's awesome.
Bloodline is really good. And that's a little bit slow, too, and there's a really dark undercurrent.
What's that about?
It's about a family.
It's a TV show.
Yeah, it's a TV show on Netflix. It's got like 13 episodes, and the acting in it is really well done, and it's got good pacing and character development.
Nigel had to go there. What's it about? He asked that to Gabriel. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Go on, then, Rick. Have you got a recommendation for the
Watch
listeners?
Bloodline. It's good.
None other than the two I mentioned.
Okay. Mimic, and was it – what was the other one? Splice?
28 Weeks. 28 Weeks. Set in London. You might like that one, Nigel.
Okay, cool. I like that. All right, on that note, thank you everybody for being on the show. Thank you listeners for tuning in and listening. If anybody wants stickers, give us a shout out on Twitter. I'm mailing them out all the time. Gabriel,
especially,
shush.
Especially if you like really big.
Dude, you totally got some small ones as well, right? Small stickers.
I got only the giant dinner plates.
Right, let me send you some more, because I've got loads of small ones, smaller stickers.
It takes up half my laptop.
Okay, you rude British guest. I want to thank our guest, Melissa Gurney,
yes, thanks, Melissa,
for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
It has been a pleasure.
Hey, Melissa, are you the Mark Twomey of the U.S.?
Twomey.
Oh my. Oh. I can't go there, man.
I'll tell you right now, she is not, because you would have like 50 yeah. film recommendations.
Yeah, we hope you have yeah. a social life.
I do have a social life. You should check out Jessica Jones if we're including yeah, TV Jones shows,
yeah.
shows and not just movies. Jessica Jones is pretty cool.
I shall
on the too. Superhero kick, and also the whole anti-hero angle is kind of fun.